Rafe met with Penny's therapist in a small conference room. The man regarded Rafe with an expression somewhere between condescension and contempt.
I suppose it's all right for her to move here for a short while, but she'll need careful supervision. She's certainly not yet ready to be on her own. Really, I felt the nurturing home environment was the best thing for her.
Nurturing home environment? You've been to our house?
I understand that you were removed from the house at an early age. Perhaps your resentment has blinded you to the qualities such a home has to offer.
That house is the same house in which she was snatched up by a kidnapper and saved only because I shot him. That house is the same one in which she saw her husband murdered as he tried to protect her, and from which she and my parents were abducted to be held in captivity and tortured. She hates that house. She doesn't feel safe in that house.
It is important for people like your sister to confront their fears, whatever you think. It's a lovely house. Comfortable, beautifully furnished.
Did you notice the pale patch in the living room where her husband's blood had stained the floor and the intruders poured bleach on it to clean it up?
No. If I may say so, you sound quite hostile and angry. It will not help your sister to be around a hostile person in her present state.
You're evading the issue. Penny suffered severe trauma, physical and emotional. She associates that house with danger. She's told me that she can't sleep, that she relives both abductions over and over. She needs to be where she feels safe.
You, sir, are not a therapist. You are disturbed. You have always been disturbed.
Excuse me?
Your therapist was my partner until his untimely death. I have seen your records. A born sociopath, a child killing without remorse. Your subsequent course in the best possible therapeutic environment was proof of your deep-seated disturbance.
Poppycock.
Rafe felt the dangerous edge of a magnificent and well-deserved rage, into which all the frustrations and angers of the past 2 days merged. And yet, this was Penny's therapist. He had to be sure she was taken care of.
I was a child who killed an adult intent on killing or harming him, and intent on killing or harming his sister. The fact you can't get around is that Penny and I would not be alive if I'd not acted.
But you should have felt...
Feelings are what they are. It's what you do with them that matters. I should have saved my sister and myself, and I did. I was scared. I was terrified. I used that fear to do what needed to be done. But that's decades in the past. Now it's my sister who needs help. And once again, I'm going to get her the help she needs, which is not being told to confront her fears by staying in the location where the trauma happened. I'll be seeking another therapist for her.
You aren't qualified.
To do the therapy? Of course not. To find her a competent therapist, yes. You will, of course, be reimbursed for today's session and this conference.
You can't do this!
Penny is an adult. She is free to choose whomever she wants for her therapist. She does not want you.
I'll have to hear that from her.
Rafe turned to the door.
Penny?
Penelope came in.
You don't really mean...
I don't want to keep seeing you. I know I need more therapy. Rafe will help me arrange it.
My dear, you don't know what you're saying. Your brother is not a safe companion for you.
My brother rescued me twice. I think I'll take that over your notions of safety.
Emil, see that this gentleman gets safely to his transportation. Penny, I'm sorry. I didn't realize the family had chosen someone like that for you.
Penny's eyes were red and glittered with unshed tears. She blinked them back.
That's not your fault. I think Mother just went automatically to the same clinic. It's what she knew, and she really wasn't thinking clearly. Neither was I. I didn't realize he'd been your therapist's partner. How will we find another?
By doing what I should have done in the first place. The team I hired to get you out, they work with victims all the time. I'll call Gary.
Rafe looked at the clock.
After lunch, I'll call Gary. Let's have lunch together. We can have it in the apartment. We can get you settled in there.
The apartment, meant for visiting VIPs, had a curved window overlooking the river and its park in the dining area. Penelope didn't look at the trays on the table with their insulated covers.
This window...
One-way glass, and armored, as well as a full alarm system. Look at this strip here, and this. You will set the combination of your bedroom door to whatever you wish. It's unlocked now, but it has a push-bar emergency exit, so you can always get out. And I hope you don't mind.
Rafe opened the bedroom door.
I saw how you seemed cold at home, and you brought only one small case. I ordered in some additional covers.
Rafe, thank you.
I think we need lunch. Leave your case in there. Freshen up.
Yes.
Penny actually ate some of the thick soup and warm bread he'd ordered.
I need to get back to work. Do you need a nap, or are you good for another round of digging through figures?
I'll come. Unless I'm being too clingy.
She was, but it wasn't her fault. Nothing was her fault, including his feeling of being trapped.
Not at all. And you'll want to be there when I talk to Gary about therapists. We need to find you the right one.
Gary had a list, as Rafe had expected. Penny's former therapist wasn't on it.
If you're a socialite having anxiety attacks because your cook got sick 2 days before a dinner party, he might be of use, but not for anything serious. I've had clients before who went to him because he's the big name that social class knows about. Your sister needs one of the others. Consider the woman. All her trauma's been from men, right?
Good point. How do you feel about a woman therapist, Penny?
I think I'd like that.
Rita's solid, sensible. Her background's a little unusual, but she's helped all my clients who've gone to her. Want me to give her a heads up?
I was going to call her right away, but yes.
Gary, Rafe knew, had data collected from the site that he had not shared with Rafe, data from the abductor's own files. Penny's therapist should have that.
Go ahead. Tell her we were the extrication team, and that I'll forward the usual background data.
Rafe called the woman's office. When he explained who he was, that his sister had been held hostage, and gave Gary's name, the therapist came online at once. She was a middle-aged woman with streaks of white in her hair.
Let me speak to her, please. It is her therapy. And if you could give her some privacy?
Rafe called Penny over to the console and walked out to Emil's desk, bemused that someone he hadn't actually hired yet was giving him orders.
How's she doing?
As well as can be expected. Emil, are you falling for her?
No, sir, she seems like such a nice girl, woman, and she's had such an awful experience.
You're right, and that's exactly why she shouldn't have even such a paragon as you trying to get too close to her too soon.
I wouldn't think of it, sir. I just hope things go well for her from now on.
Rafe looked at Emil's earnest face and thought about saying more, but Emil was so young, and probably had a girl already, or a string of them.
Just be kind to her.
All right, Rafe, come on back.
The monitor was blank. She had ended the call.
I don't know if I like her exactly, but I feel good about her. I told her that I'd moved out of the house, and she said that that was a healthy decision. I hope you don't mind my talking to her without you.
Not at all. She's your therapist. There's no reason for me to know everything you say to each other.
The rest of that day passed in a blur. The conference with the sector commanders on readiness, a call to Mackenzie's local representative, another conference with the nearest sector commander on tactical analysis of the battle, plus the new control supervisor wanting authorization for all the overtime doubling shifts would require, and queries from news media about the change in CEO. He was just wondering whether to have a late supper sent up or go somewhere when his mother called, looking haggard.
Rafe, how could you? Firing Dr. Braden like that? He's one of the most prominent therapists in the city. He called me. He was so upset. He says you're not fit to take charge of Penelope, that you're separating her from her family means you want to control her. Now, Rafe, I know you're not as bad as he says, but...
Mother, please... Listen, Dr. Braden was affiliated with the same therapist who caused me so much grief. More important than that, Penny didn't feel comfortable with him. She is a new therapist, someone Gary recommended.
Gary?
the man who commanded the team that got you out. He is the system expert on hostage extrication. He has a list of therapists he knows who are particularly skilled in helping people recover from that experience. Penny's already talked to one and decided to try her for a time.
Dr. Braden said you might say something like that, and he said if she got a new therapist, it must not be a woman, that she has issues which require a male therapist.
I looked this woman up.
Rafe didn't need to tell her. It was after Penny had already decided.
She has multiple publications in reputable journals on issues relating to the care of survivors of serious trauma. She is taught in 2 medical schools and is still on the adjunct faculty of one of them.
Oh.
Mother, I'm not interested in controlling Penny. I do want her to heal from all this as quickly and as thoroughly as possible. And that wasn't going to happen in the same house where she saw her husband killed.
I just wanted things to be like they were. I thought if... And Dr. Braden says she needed to confront her fear.
I'll give you the names of the therapists Gary recommends. You can see for yourself that they have solid credentials.
I just want...
Rafe squeezed his own eyes shut and waited. What she wanted was impossible. As impossible as his childhood wish for that awful night to have been a dream. Or his wish now that he could go back to his own life, far away from Nexus.
Oh, you must think I'm crazy, crying like this. It's over. I should be over it.
No, I don't think you're crazy.
The house is so... so empty. So big. And your father.
Rafe had a moment's terror that she was thinking of moving into headquarters with his father. The thought of all of them here was too unpleasant to be borne.
But we have to stay. We have to show we aren't afraid.
Mother, all you and father have to do is recover. You don't have to prove anything to me or anyone else. If you need to go to...
Rafe racked his brain. They had had a summer cabin in the mountains, but it was too much like the resort where they had been held, logs and all.
Why not that place in the islands? The warm water would be good for Father. You know the house is cold and relatively isolated in winter. Some of your friends are probably down there already.
She said nothing for a long moment. He was afraid she'd start crying again.
Rafe, you may be right. I'll talk to the doctors. I don't know what Dr. Braden will say.
I'll check with Gary and see if one of the therapists he recommends is in the area. I'm sure we can find someone, and Father's medical team can travel with him, if this is what you decide.
I'll think about it. I really will. I'm just so tired all the time these days.
Of course you are. But some time in the warmth and sun might help you more than this gloomy cold.
My house plants.
We can get a plant service in to take care of them.
Maybe you're right. Maybe. And it's only going to get colder. I'll look up some of the places, see if anything's open.
For the wife of ISC's former CEO, someplace would be open, if he had to bribe someone to cut their own vacation short.
That's what I have a personal assistant for. Let me take care of it.
Would you?
Yes, but not without checking with you to be sure it's what you want. I'm not trying to force you into anything.
Not much. He wanted his parents out of the city, into someplace safe, and out of his hair. Yes, he believed it would be good for them to be out of that house, with all its toxic memories, and into a warmer climate. But he was still manipulating them with all the skill he had used on unsuspecting Marks before. And he knew it.
I'll just let you take care of it then. I know it's the high season, but if you could, something with a view?
I'm sure we can find something you like.
After his mother clicked off, Rafe put a note in Emil's file. Perhaps he could get through supper without another crisis. A night's sleep was probably too much to hope for. That depressing prediction came true in the middle of the night when he was woken with the news that the McKinsey home system Ansible was now functional.
I knew you'd want to know right away.
What's the time conversion?
For McKinsey headquarters, It's about mid-afternoon there. It should be 14:30 there, sir, but I don't know if they have seasonal time changes.
Thank you.
It was 02:13 here, and his eyes felt gritty. He lay back and closed them, but his mind raced. He was awake. He was far too awake to go back to sleep. He was in one of the small guest rooms for lower-ranking overnight guests. Comfortable enough, but dull, all tans and browns, with a single landscape print on the wall. The adjoining bath unit was compact. He showered and dressed, adjusting his suit carefully. A CEO should look like a CEO, his father had always said. In his office, he set up the secure Ansible relay and took a moment to review what ISC knew about McKinsey's current chief. A senior executive in enforcement had been sent as a personal representative, and he had completed a detailed assessment of Arlen Becker, the current CEO. He was still listed. McKinsey's CEOs usually served for 5 local years in that position. Rafe scanned the file. Becker's profile fit what he'd expected. The man looked like the retired general he was. He had kept himself fit. His implant bulges were almost concealed by silvering hair. And McKinsey, proven innocent in the Sabine affair, had retrieved their bond in its entirety. No more delay. Rafe activated the link. The first face on the screen wasn't Becker's, of course, but the assistant quickly put Rafe through.
You're not Garston Dunbarger.
No, I'm his son Rafe. My father is not competent at present.
Oh? I'm not sure I like the sound of that. Family problems?
He was abducted and severely injured. His implant was destroyed, and he's undergoing intensive rehabilitation after neuroimplant surgery. Lou Parmina, whom you may have talked to, my father's chief assistant and intended to be a successor as CEO, was responsible.
I see. And where were you?
Off planet when it happened. You may have heard that I was a renegade, a remittance man. Unofficially, I was on assignment for ISC, my father's clandestine eyes and ears. When he didn't contact me at the usual interval, I made my way back to Nexus, delayed by such things as that little incident Kai Vada got us into with Osman Vada.
Ah, that, yes. Though my commander didn't report you as being involved.
I was using an alias. If you check that report, you'll find mention of a young man named Rafe who was able to fix Ansibles and claimed to be an ISC agent.
You're the one? Yes, I do recall that. And you're Garston's son.
Yes. I am acting CEO while he is incapacitated.
I see. I presume this is about your encounter with the Blue Ridge Defense Alliance pirates and some of our ships?
Related to that, yes. I presume your commanders on the scene have told you what they've learned about those pirates?
Yes. Not all the data have been analyzed yet, but I am aware that pirates invaded and defeated Bissonnette system, as well as several other less populous systems. And that at least some of the ships in this recent encounter were originally Bissonnette ships.
And I'm sure your commanders told you about the abysmal performance of the ISC fleet. One of the things I did when first taking over here was assess the response capability of our fleet. It wouldn't do any good to try to conceal from you what I found and what your commander saw.
One of your ships blew because its munitions exploded just outside the ship. Did you know that?
Yes. Old stuff that had degraded in storage.
How long have you been in charge?
Only a few 10 days.
So, you know that I know what you know. What is it you want?
And what are you willing to pay, said his expression.
Did your commander tell you about the new technology that the Space Defense Force ships have? Onboard Ansibles that can provide real-time communications between ships?
He said something like that. I'm dubious. You people have always said it was impossible.
It's not. I've seen it myself. I know it works.
It's ISC tech?
No, unfortunately. The patent holder is Vada Enterprises, associated with the new Vada Transport Headquarters on Cascadia, over in the Moscow Confederation. We're trying to get a license to manufacture it.
I see. So you just want to chat about it?
No. I assume you're interested in obtaining some of these units.
I would be. Once I'm convinced they exist and work as described.
And I assume you'd like to take care of the pirates who mauled your ships.
Not as badly as they mauled your ships.
No argument on that. But I see these pirates as a danger to more than your company, or my company, or anyone's system. I believe they are indeed intent on dominating as much of human space as possible, and that the widespread Ansible failure is at least in part their doing. It's allowed them to strike without warning, to gain ships and other material, and grow ever more dangerous.
I'd agree. I believe I can anticipate your next suggestion. You think we should all join together to wipe them out. Is that it?
Yes. I know that Kai Vada had a similar idea, which, frankly, I thought was outrageous at the time.
A very gifted young commander, my people tell me. Too young and inexperienced for what she's trying to do, but she did save some of our people in this most recent engagement. You were on her ship. What do you think of her?
Rafe opened his mouth, then paused. What came into his head was nothing Becker needed to know.
She's young in years, but she's been through a lot, and she's not immature. Intelligent, of course. Can be impulsive, but less so than when I first joined her ship. More decisive than impulsive now, I'd say. Ethically, pretty much a straight arrow. I'd say perfectly willing to use deception in combat, but not to lie in ordinary situations.
One of my commanders back in the Sabine mess was concerned that she had a weakness common to many young female commanders. Going soft on boys with problems.
Kai? Well, that's changed, if she ever had it. I'd say she's nearly immune to that kind of thing. Her cousin told me she'd had a bad experience with a first love.
So you'd trust her in a command setting?
I already have. Remember, I was on her ship when Osman Vada tried to take it over.
Do you think she's got a chance with this space defense force she's started?
I don't know. To most people, she'll appear just as you said. Too young, too inexperienced. But results count more than appearances in the long run. The last time I saw her, she had one ship but had already found one ally. Now she has, what, five? And she survived more than one space battle. If she can convince systems to work with her and get funding, I'd bet on her.
But you're talking to me.
You're quite right. Kai may have a powerful force in the future, but you have one right now, and my concern is immediate. Nexus is a rich, populous system and the communications hub for most of human-occupied space. If that doesn't define target...
That's true. And you've just learned that ISC's famous fleet is a bunch of bright, shiny, obsolescent window decorations. So you want to hire us. Is that it?
Nexus government has an interest. So, I'm sure, does the Moscow Confederation. Do you have the resources to take another major contract?
That is a question. I'll need to check on some things. We can't cheat current contract partners. I'm sure we could contribute something, but right off the top of my head, I don't know how much.
Rafe was sure he did, but understood the reluctance to make that commitment too soon.
It won't come cheap.
Of course not. You're one of the top mercenary companies, if not the best. I might just suggest that payment in kind. Say, some of those onboard Ansibles could be arranged as part of your fee.
I'll get back to you. Let's see, it's... Good heavens, man, it's the middle of the night for you.
It's been one of those days. I'll catch some sleep later.
The news from Cascadia is not good, Mr. President.
What's wrong with Cascadia?
Grace handed over a list.
Nothing yet, but these systems are known to have fallen to pirate hordes, and there's evidence that they are led by the same person who attacked Slaughter Key civilians from space.
You mean who attacked your family?
It was my family, yes, but the important point to me as Rector of Defense, and you as President, is that they attacked Slaughter Key. Attacked the planet itself, killing and injuring thousands of Slaughter Key citizens, including many Vata employees who were not members of my family.
I suspect you're about to suggest an official action that you want me to approve.
Slaughter Key maintains a privateer system, a system that's been reasonably successful in keeping the general level of piracy, the one or two ships attacking our trade, to a minimum. As the data show, piracy was increasing in several sectors prior to the attack on Vata interests. Concern had been expressed, and the previous administration had even authorized an increase in the number of letters of marque some months before the attack. That was later rescinded, only about 45 days before.
Yes, yes, I know that. There's evidence the former president was complicit in the attack. Cases are in court now.
My point is, if the purpose of having privateers is to attack pirates, and the pirates are now coalescing into larger groups that no privateer alone can possibly handle, isn't it time to have our privateers join forces with others? With Slaughter Key Space Force, after we authorize their activity outside this system, or with the space forces of governments we know and trust?
You mean make privateers into a regular military force?
We already have military advisors on nearly all our privateers. This is a natural next step.
It doesn't seem natural to me. You're talking about having them operate outside the system. We certainly can't release Space Force ships for that. We have barely enough to guard our own system. If anything, we should call our privateers in.
You have heard of forward scouts, early warning, that sort of thing. Let our privateers take on that role, only now operating in groups large enough to be effective against this new enemy. And if we call them in, we not only lose that, we gain the expense. The privateers have always been self-sufficient, though we gave them a cut rate on munitions if they resupplied here.
You never cease to surprise me. You're new in government, and already you know what levers to lean on.
When it comes to accounting, an interstellar business isn't that far from a government. Except that our bottom line always has to come out on the profit side of the ledger.
So what precisely do you propose?
Assuming you're sure we can't send Space Force along?
The president shook his head. She could tell he meant it.
Then consider only the privateers. Contact them. Tell them to assemble. I would suggest at Cascadia Station, since that's where they can be fitted with onboard Ansibles.
We'll need to find a commander for them, and staff, and support services, and...
You already have a commander. Kai Vata's already engaged this enemy more than once, and she's familiar with the tactical differences arising from the new communications technology.
But she's not even an Academy graduate. Even if she were, she'd be only an ensign, maybe a junior lieutenant.
She has the experience, and she holds a letter of marque from Slaughter Key.
And she's a Vata, and you're a Vata, and you're telling me that Vata is the only source of this new technology, which I've never heard of before. Without intending insult, I have to say that this smacks of...
favoritism, nepotism, even. I agree. It could be interpreted that way. Or it could be interpreted as the inverse of the hostility that led to most of my family being killed and our livelihood destroyed.
Gray smiled at him, letting her teeth show.
Your appointment was supposed to do that.
My appointment was supposed to give me the access to do what needed to be done. If that turns out to be good for both Slaughter Key and Vata, so be it.
She stared him in the face. He looked away first.
I have to be convinced it is good for everyone.
I have no wish to harm Slaughter Key, nor does the Vata family, the surviving remnants. This is my home. I want the system to survive. I want the people here to survive. No one should be targeted as we were. I take my duties as rector very seriously. But the fact is that Vata family members have done more than anyone else up to this point.
He knew exactly what she meant, and she knew that he knew.
Well, I suppose Space Force is in agreement?
I have not spoken with Space Force. It's an executive decision. It would be inappropriate without your approval. And actually, you should be the one to initiate the discussion.
I'll do that today. At least this proposal doesn't take our ships out of the system.
That night over dinner, Grace told MacRobert what she'd done.
You're pushing very hard. You're making some people nervous.
Some people? Some people would get nervous if you said boo above a whisper. You and I both know there's serious trouble out there. And the best way to keep it away from us is to go meet it.
It's all the Vada connections. Someone's been snooping around the old stuff looking for dirt.
Oh, Big family, big money, big business. There's dirt if they know where to look, but no more dirt than anybody else.
This Osmond fellow.
He's dead now, and Avata killed him.
To silence him, some would say.
Oh, some would say anything. So they've uncovered the family skeleton, have they?
Not all of it, but some. Maybe enough to cause us trouble. I don't suppose you could persuade your niece to allow the new tech to be sold under another name?
Grace finished her fish.
I don't know. I think Slaughter Key would like to have the credit. This Varta family, yes, but Varta has always been based on Slaughter Key, so it's a system thing as well.
But your niece isn't here, and another system's getting the profits.
She'd probably license manufacture here. I hadn't thought of that. Would it butter the right side of the bread if units were manufactured here as well?
It would lessen the concern I'm hearing that Varta's abandoning Slaughter Key for Moscow Confederation.
I'll talk to Stella. And I'll have to see what I can scare up in manufacturing.
Stella agreed to license manufacture on Slaughter Key, but insisted on safeguards so any pirate agents could not get the tech.
You'll need to find a facility able to tool up quickly and still maintain quality control.
Grace thought of grandmothers and eggs and sucking, but forbore to say so.
And security. These new units will give us an edge, but only if the pirates don't get them.
I've done that.
I'll send you the specs, but not the full package yet. I'll want information on the facility and their estimate after they've seen the specs on time to production, and I control pricing.
Stella, this is your home world.
It's the world that let outsiders kill my family and destroy our lives. I know the old government's out, and there's a new government, and you're part of it. But that doesn't bring my father, brothers, and sister back, or Kai's parents, or any of our employees. It doesn't change my responsibility as CEO of Varta Enterprises and Varta Transport Limited. Slaughter Key is getting a special deal. I'm going to license manufacture there. That's it.
Grace looked at that beautiful face, still breathtaking in its perfection. Of course, Stella had changed. She had expected Stella to change. But this Stella had changed in a direction Grace had not anticipated. She wondered if it was Osmond's side of her, or something else.
Send me the information. I'll forward it, and we'll get back to you very quickly. Has production started there?
Not quite. They're retooling from another job.
What would you sell units to Slaughter Key privateers for?
Same as anyone else. But for now, we're limiting initial sales to established military organizations. The first production run here is completely committed.
Our privateers are being activated as an arm of Space Force. The idea is to have them get together and act as one or two fleets. That should make them military enough for you.
Have you talked to Kai about this? If you want her to command...
No. I suppose I should. How can I get in touch with her?
You'll have to relay through me for now, and even I can't contact her at the moment. She's in FTL as far as I know, and I'm not sure when she'll be back down or if her destination has a working Ansible. Once she's out of FTL, I can contact her on board Ansible. If she lets me know she's available, that is.
Won't she contact you right away?
Kai? In a way, she's like you. She doesn't call just to chat. She'll call when she has something to say, or ask. She likes being off the leash.
The headquarters of MMAC looked much like any corporate headquarters. A typical office building, its lobby all shiny surfaces. Somewhat to Kai's surprise, the young man who met her at the security gate was not in uniform, though from his bearing, he could have been. He ushered her past the guards and into the express elevator.
So glad you could come, Captain Varta. Chairman Becker is looking forward to meeting you. I just wanted to express my own thanks for your actions at Box Top. My brother was there. One of your ships took him in and gave him medical attention.
Thank you. Do you know which of our ships?
Shara's Gift, ma'am. I know that's not your flagship, but you're the one in charge, and you're here.
You're more than welcome. I wish we'd been able to save them all.
Becker's office, as well as the rest of the building, could have been any civilian executive's, even her father's. For an instant, a wave of grief and nostalgia swept over her. She knew how offices like this worked. She could almost predict where to find the inevitable person in admin who knew how to find anything at all, the person who kept the pipes operating, the whiz in accounting who could fix any glitch. Her father had only limited information on MMAC and the implant she wore, all recent gleanings from that short period when she'd been in McKenzie hands. She knew, because they had briefed her, that MMAC's CEO was one Arlen Becker, formerly a general. She had seen his image, so when the door to his private office opened and he came out, she knew at once who it was. What surprised her was how little she felt intimidated by him. He reminded her of the Commandant of Space Force Academy, but she was no longer the cadet who had feared the twitch of an eyelid. He led her into his office and waved her to a seat in the cluster of chairs around a small table.
You've done us an immense service, Captain Vada, and a great courtesy in leaving your ship to come meet me here. We have much to discuss.
I'm glad we could help.
Would you like something to drink? We have hot and cold.
The service module on the table lit with a selection.
Tea, please. Hot.
Becker tapped the module and then handed her a cup and saucer in porcelain that bore no signs of a corporate logo. Small blue flowers alternated with red and gold butterflies. A plate in the same pattern held thin gold-edged rounds that looked like cookies.
One of my indulgences. My wife inherited 4 generations of fine china, and this is a pattern she's never liked, and I always did, so I brought it here.
Kai wondered how long this would go on, but sipped her tea. It was his office and his initiative for now.
We owe you a lot. We would certainly have lost both of the ships in the training exercise, and quite possibly those of the relief convoy as well, if you had not shown up and helped us out. I've read the detailed reports of our people on the scene, and of course I'm familiar with our earlier encounters with you, from that unfortunate business at Sabine to the contract at Lastway.
Kai nodded.
My people tell me that you have some novel technology for sale, and some proposition you'd like to lay before us. But first, if you don't mind, our Ansible has been out for almost a planetary cycle until a few days ago, and we're still behind on events. You've been out and around. I'd like to have your assessment of what's going on, as far as you're willing to give it.
Kai took another swallow of tea, looked at the cookies, and decided not to risk choking on crumbs while talking.
There's a lot I don't know, but this is what we've put together.
She laid out all she knew of the attacks on systems, citing the 3 she knew for sure.
That's a very organized report. I can see you learned something in the academy. So, do you think the Ansible system's breakup is the result of the same people?
I don't know for sure, but it must have made their plan easier to execute. They have communications and others don't.
These shipboard Ansibles, or whatever they are?
Yes, that's what they are. Small Ansibles that give the pirates real-time communications with one another.
Even between systems?
Yes. They don't work in FTL flight, of course, but in real space, they're the same as system Ansibles. Better, in a way, because there's no light lag from ship to ship due to the distance from a ship to the system Ansible.
And you have some? You're selling them?
They were on the ship we captured. The one Osman stole from the Vada family. He must have been working with the pirates.
Colonel Bandis described the way you used that capability in this recent battle. I can certainly see that ships not so equipped would be easy meat for those that are. We would be interested in purchasing such units from you, subject to approval by our technology assessment group. In fact, if you wanted to sell all your remaining units, we'd be delighted. But let me, for the moment, go back to your own actions. The last direct report we had of you, you had an older, small ship, the trade ship with which you started, and the ship you had taken from Osman, a larger ship originally built as a trade ship. Is that right?
Yes.
Kai explained how she and Gary Tobai had separated, and how they finally came back together. He didn't need to know about her problems with Stella or the trial of identity, but he did need to know about her first experience with a multi-system force. He listened intently, not interrupting, until she finished.
Why do you call yourself part of a third fleet when there's nothing but you?
Misdirection.
I see. But you really have only 3 ships of any size, 2 of them originally trading vessels, only 1 purpose-built for combat.
What can you possibly hope to achieve with such a unit?
With all due respect, sir, Ransom's Rangers have considerably more value when fitted with onboard Ansibles than conventional tables of organization would suggest. As you know, we were able to take on 4 of the pirate ships and sustain no damage. If we had not been short of munitions, we could have been much more help in the larger battle.
Your communications ability was invaluable there, I agree. But I cannot see that your Space Defense Force is any more than, forgive me, a forlorn hope. You have no contract for financial support from any government, no resources for resupply of ships, munitions, or basic supplies.
I believe we can get such support.
Perhaps. Though, allow me to say that my experience in dealing with governments is greater than yours, and I think it highly unlikely. Effective as your small force may be, out of proportion to its size, it will still look puny to those used to thinking in terms of dozens of ships purpose-built for war. Now, as you know, we are grateful for your assistance. It is due to you that we lost only one ship, that casualties were less than they might have been, and that the relief convoy didn't run straight into disaster. We have authorized replacement of munitions and a small amount of financial bonus beyond that.
Thank you, sir.
We are not prepared, however, to release any of our ships to join you, which I believe is what you hoped for, and part of the proposition you wanted to lay before me.
I did, yes, sir.
If we saw support from governments, commitment of sufficient resources, we might indeed cooperate and join such an effort. We would be amenable to a contract with such governments. If your assessment of the enemy strength is accurate, and I have no reason to doubt it, then this is what must happen in the future. But it will be done by governments reaching agreement with one another, not by an individual, however courageous and talented.
Kai had to admit that made sense. It was the argument others had made, but she didn't like it.
There's another problem. Your ships are all converted merchanters, aren't they?
More or less.
Kai wondered what Teddy Ransom would think of his decorative little vessels being called merchanters.
I don't know how far you got into engineering at your military academy, but there are problems involved in converting ships built to haul cargo into fighting ships.
Privateers have been doing it for a long time.
Right, but they're lightly armed, and they don't fight very often. Most of the time, privateers fire off a few missiles or scorch someone with a beam. The pirate surrenders or runs off, and the whole thing lasts maybe a half hour. Even so, ships used as privateers have a shorter lifespan and less time between refits than ships purpose-built for combat. 2 things go wrong with conversions. One involving the more powerful engines you put in, and the other involving the way the ship is used.
Kai wanted to argue, but she didn't have any data.
I gather you weren't aware of this?
No, sir.
And you're probably wondering if it's true. Here's how we know. Old John started out with converted cargo ships, just like the ones you have. The shorter interval for refit and the shorter overall lifespan come straight out of our files. Sooner or later, and with jury-rigged repairs like those you have in the airlocks the Gretnans damaged, it will be much sooner, you're going to start having structural failures.
Structural?
Yes. Most conversions overpower the original structure. The increased G-forces in rapid maneuver and in repeated frequent micro-jumps put more strain on the frame than it was designed for. Repeated rapid missile launches during combat do the same thing. And the waste heat from a beam on full power eventually causes problems with the mount.
Becker's look was sympathetic, but Kai felt as if she'd just been hit with a length of pipe. She had worried about money, endlessly, daily, but she had never worried about the structural integrity of the ships, as long as they weren't damaged in combat.
I can have our engineers check over your ships, no charge, and give you an estimate of the damage so far. We'd be glad to do that for you.
Before I kill someone with ignorance? No. I suppose. Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Not entirely. We'd hate to see a gifted and honorable commander killed by a preventable failure. In addition, we'd like to offer you and your other captains commissions in Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation. We understand that you have not had the benefit of our training programs, and the war we both see coming may give no time for that. So it's our idea to use you together as a unit within our existing command structure. I believe our government will be negotiating with others soon, now that our Ansible is back up.
Becker sat back. Obviously, he thought this was an attractive offer. Kai could think of nothing to say. She had clung to the hope that Mackenzie would assign ships to the effort, though she didn't expect they'd let her command their people. From their point of view, they were being generous. She had talked to enough of their officers in the past few days to know this offer was unprecedented.
Thank you. I do appreciate your offer, but I need to think about it and talk it over with my people.
Yeah. The offer is open. I'm not trying to rush you. You're an unusual young officer. I understand your ambition and your desire for independent command, but you're still inexperienced in many areas that senior commanders need. You could gain that experience with us.
Thank you.
And on another topic, our founder, John Mackenzie, we call him Old John behind his back, but I wouldn't advise it to his face, would like to meet you. Would you be free for dinner, say, day after tomorrow? I would be present, along with several of our more senior commanders. Your captains are invited as well, though I expect you'll want to leave someone on duty topside. Civilian dress, casual.
I'd be delighted, and I'm sure my captains will be too. Only, what is casual here? On my home planet, casual means recreational clothes. Anything from a swimsuit with a towel over one shoulder to hunting camouflage.
Well, we'd call that undress. Our casual might be what you'd call business attire, I suppose. Not uniforms, not evening dress. Daytime professional?
The good gray suit. We can certainly manage that. Day after tomorrow? What time, local?
19:30 for drinks. We'll send transport for you at the shuttleport, 1900.
Kai rode the shuttle up to Max Station 1 in deepening gloom. Everything Becker said made sense, sense she didn't want to see. She would ask her own engineering techs about structural stresses, but she was sure Becker had told the truth. She could only hope that the engineer's examination would not show any flaws likely to kill them in the next few months. Back on the station, she met the other captains at the Captain's Guild, where they usually met for a quiet meal.
So, what's next?
Teddy Ransom had been asking that every day.
Mackenzie wants to give us all commissions and take us into their organization as a separate unit.
I gather you didn't agree.
I wouldn't, unless you all wanted to. But they think of it as a generous offer. They don't think we'll get funding from any governments because we're so small.
Kai wasn't going to say anything about the structural problems until the engineers had inspected Vanguard. If it had symptoms of excessive strain, she would have to warn them.
Small but effective. They can't deny that.
They didn't. They said we were far more effective than our size suggested. But I can see the difficulty of saying that to governments. How would they know?
So, what kind of commissions?
We didn't get into specifics. I wasn't ready to sign on the line. But they did say they thought of using us as a single unit within the organization.
Ransom leaned back in his seat.
Doesn't appeal to me. I like working with you, not some mercenary. And it's not like I need the money.
I'm still technically a Slaughter Key privateer. I don't think it would be appropriate.
Well, I'd do it. No offense or disrespect to you. You're as good a commander as any I've served with. But an experienced military organization has a lot to offer. A ready-made staff, supply lines, and depots already set up. If you do it, I would too.
I haven't made up my mind. I want to strike back at the people who attacked my homeworld, and I want to do it effectively. Becker's sure that means joining a larger organization. Well, think about it, all of you. If one or more decide to sign on with Mackenzie, that changes the whole situation.
You started with one ship. I have two.
Kai was glad to change topics.
By the way, we're all invited to have dinner with their founder day after tomorrow. That one I did accept. Civilian business attire.
All of us off our ships at once. Are you sure that's wise?
Actually, you'll have to draw straws. Someone's definitely staying up here just in case. I don't think Mackenzie's up to anything, and the system defenses here are on high alert. but it's just good practice.
I'll volunteer, if that's all right with you.
Fine. Otherwise, the rest of you want to come? They all nodded. The next morning, two McKenzie engineers showed up with a half dozen assistants and stacks of equipment, only some of which Kai recognized.
I'm Mason Materny, and this is Bess Fornet. We're from the main repair yard for McKenzie vessels, and I understand you wanted your ship checked for structural problems, is that right?
Yes.
It would be easier if you were in our repair dock, but we brought some equipment with us. I understand you've had airlock damage.
Yes, twice. Kai explained and handed them the data cube she'd prepared. I didn't find the usual repair log when we took over this ship, so the repairs are those I had made.
And you fought how many engagements?
And have you done any weapons practice outside those engagements?
It's all in there. 4 engagements, but no missiles fired in the second. And yes, weapons practice. For most of that day, the assessment team roamed the ship, escorted by Kai's own crew members. They ran tests on everything, it seemed, with special attention to the damaged areas around the emergency airlock and the old cargo bay entry hatch, the mounts for the drives, and the mounts for the beam weapon. By 1700 local time, they had a preliminary report for Kai. She invited Hugh and her own engineering staff to sit in on the presentation.
You were lucky, or the person who retrofitted the advanced drives and munitions knew about what to look for. As you know, this was built as a standard cargo hauler.
The schematic for its framing came up on the screen.
Someone did a pretty good job of reinforcing here and here. Just using the more powerful drives and controllers wouldn't overstress the longitudinal framing. Mounting the beam weapon in the midline reduces problems, but we did find evidence of early deterioration in the beam mounts from insufficient heat reduction. To save space, the refitters tried to combine the heat management with the mounts proper, instead of using more appropriate structures. Now, that's an older design and suggests the refit was done more than 25 years ago. You might find an outlaw repair yard still using it, but no one reputable.
Another problem is all these hidden passages someone put in. We didn't explore them except to note voids that might be problematic. Some of them are. This reduces your lateral stability, which counts in maneuvering and firing missiles.
Bottom line?
Bottom line is that your ship is space-worthy right now, but needs major work in a good yard if she's to stay that way. I understand you're interested in buying into McKenzie using ships as capital. I have to say that this ship's value is reduced at least 23% because of what it'll cost to bring it up to our standard.
And how long will she be space-worthy? Can you give me an estimate?
Well, that emergency repair you did, back at Gretna? That's not going to be good for many more FTL transitions, but fixing that won't address the more serious structural problems. I'd say you've got perhaps 2 hours total of beam use before one of those mounts fractures, and that could be extremely serious. The lateral member showing stress should be good for several engagements, but if we did take this ship in, we'd put it straight into the yard for a complete refit.
Another blow to her idea of starting her own military force. If her own ship was likely to fall apart, what about the others? And she could not possibly afford a true warship when she couldn't manage even a minor repair like the airlocks.
We'll leave the report with you, Captain Vada. Now, if you decide to have this work done yourself, if you don't join McKenzie, we've been instructed to say that our repair yard will do the work at a discount, but it will still be expensive and your ship will be out of commission for somewhere between 170 and 200 days, best estimate.
Thank you. I'll let you know.
Contact information is with the report.
After they left, and her engineering staff had gone back to their duties, Kai stared at the bulkhead. Now what? She had no funds. Her space defense force was mostly smoke and mirrors, and the part that wasn't was falling apart. Even if McKenzie bought her remaining shipboard ansibles at Stella's price, even if that was enough to pay for repairs, it would not be enough in the long run to finance a war. Give in and sign up with McKenzie? It was the sensible thing to do, considering all the circumstances. She'd have the advantage of their experience, their staff work. She could almost imagine herself in a McKenzie uniform, commanding a McKenzie ship. But a mercenary? for hire to anyone with a price? That initial vision of herself on the bridge of a Mackenzie cruiser shivered and blew away at the thought. Mackenzie might be honorable, within the definition of mercenary, but that would not keep them from taking a contract from anyone with enough funds, against anyone, including, for instance, Slaughter Key. For the rest of the day, Kai went about her work and ignored the impulse to call Stella, or even Aunt Grace, and discuss it with them. She didn't want lectures or arguments. It was her decision to make. She asked Argelos and Pettigrew if they'd heard anything about structural failures due to retrofitting merchant craft with military-grade drives and weapons. Argelos said yes, but on the last yearly inspection, Shara's gift had passed clean. Pettigrew said Bassoon, like all the Bissonette privateers, had been built for military use from the start. So, it was her own ship, apparently the largest and best armed, that had the problem. But that wasn't the real dilemma. It was not only her ship, but her people, her crew, her family, her planetary government. She was not about to force anyone to join anything they didn't want to. And decency required that she help them get back to a place where they could find employment they wanted. She pushed those thoughts aside as she dressed for dinner in her good gray suit and tried to put herself in the right frame of mind, but the question kept coming back. By the time she met the other captains at the shuttle to go downside to dinner, Kai had still not decided what to do. Mackenzie's founder had chosen to live within an hour's ground transport of corporate headquarters on an estate of rolling hills. His residence, built of local stone and timber, nestled into one of the hills and looked out across a valley patchworked with fields and pastures. He came out to the terrace to greet them, dressed in a suit that Kai recognized as custom-tailored. Kai knew his nickname was Old John, but he looked too young for that, despite his gray hair and UV damage to his skin.
"I'm delighted to meet you, Captain Vada. I've been hearing about you the past several years."
"This is Captain Pettigrew of Bassoon, and Captain Ransom of Glorious, commanding Ransom's Rangers, and Captain Baskerville of Courageous." John Mackenzie turned to Pettigrew.
"I understand your home world was overrun. My deepest sympathies. Did you have family?"
"Yes. I don't want to talk about it."
"Of course."
Mackenzie turned to Teddy Ransom, whose idea of civilian business attire included a shirt with ruffles at the neck and wrists. Kai would not have been surprised if he'd had a sword at his hip.
"And you, are you aware of the history of your ship's names? I understand that you lost one, the Furious."
"Back in the days of old Earth, the days of wind and sail..."
Kai saw a telltale twinkle in Mackenzie's eye, a twitch of his lip.
"You're a student of history, Captain Ransom?"
"Call me Teddy. Not so much a student of history, but serious history. Too many years, eons even, pass with nothing to stir the blood. But some are rich with pageantry, with glory."
"Indeed. Please, do come inside. Meet the others."
Dark wood, tiled floors, comfortable furniture in rich colors, a fire crackling in a huge fireplace. Men and women who, despite being in civilian dress, were obviously Mackenzie officers. Everyone was cordial, but Kai felt that she and her captains were under a social microscope. That could cut both ways. They could examine Mackenzie as well as be examined. Mackenzie moved them expertly from pre-dinner drinks and light conversation to a dining room whose proportions reminded Kai painfully of her lost home. Here, the tabletop was a slab of polished stone, veined in pale shades of gray with a few streaks of white instead of wood. One difference in culture showed up immediately. No sooner had the first course been served than the man on Kai's left introduced himself as Colonel Vitanji.
"So, you had formal military training. I've never met anyone from Slaughter Key before. Did they include Gaussman's tactical exercises?"
"Oh, let her eat, Terry. At least 3 bites before business."
Sorry, sir. Sorry, Captain.
Terry's an instructor these past 3 years in our command course.
A woman across the table shook her head.
And he's convinced that Gauchman's is the best source on tactical maneuvers in the past 2 decades. I'm Ari Wistrom. Didn't get to meet you before dinner. Anyway, Terry will talk your ear off about tactical theory if you let him.
Not theory. Proven. Practical. Enough.
Kai tried a spoonful of the soup in front of her. Pale green, translucent, and delicious. While she ate, she listened to conversation among the officers. Business, nearly all of it, in short snatches. She liked the tone she was hearing. Brisk, good-natured, touches of wit here and there, competent. Mackenzie would have picked the best to lure her, she was sure. But these were people she could work with. After the soup came a delicious main course. Medallions of beef, potatoes sliced to make a decorative swirl. Pettigrew, Ransom, and Baskerville were chatting happily with the officers near them. Becker and Mackenzie seemed to be discussing gardening. At a nearby lull, Kai spoke to Vatanji.
Actually, we didn't have Gauchman's tactical exercises in our classes. We used Simjuk and Baye.
Yeah, not bad at all. But you should take a look at Gauchman.
What I found once we obtained the shipboard ansibles is that having instantaneous ship-to-ship communication at significant light distances both allowed and forced changes.
I'd expect so. In the last few days since we heard of the possibility, I've been trying to develop some ideas, but since you've actually done it...
Kai took another bite of potato and noticed that the table had quieted.
No need for close formations. There's still scan lag, of course, but ships can share position information via Ansible so you know exactly where your ships are. If you have small, fast ships, or stealth ships, you can shadow an enemy and transmit that information to the rest of your group. We lost one of our people that way, Captain St. Cyrian, but the data he provided before they found and destroyed his ship was most valuable.
Now they were all quiet, listening.
I'm sure we'd all like to hear what you've learned, if you don't mind sharing.
Well, not at all. As long as I don't have to miss the rest of this excellent dinner, this beef.
My own herd. Long ago and far away, I believe my ancestors must have been cattle ranchers. Because for someone brought up on spaceships, I take entirely too much pleasure in watching my cows eat grass. These are genetically modified to produce meat with specific nutritional components, which in the origins of the species weren't present. For instance, sorry, if you get me started on cattle, no one will hear about your tactical discoveries, and most of these people aren't anywhere close to retirement. They'd much rather listen to you.
Through the rest of the meal, Kai and her other captains answered questions and explained what they'd learned, using tableware and dishes to represent ships. It was the kind of intelligent, challenging discussion that Kai had always enjoyed at the academy, and by the time they adjourned to the living room with its fireplace to take dessert pastries from a tiered server on a sideboard, she was even more persuaded that she would fit in here. So might Pettigrew, she thought. He seemed happy and relaxed. Ransom and Baskerville, predictably, stood out like parrots in a flock of doves. She could not imagine them taking to the discipline Mackenzie would insist on. She couldn't tell if they were slightly drunk or just their usual flamboyant selves, but theirs were the loudest voices and most extravagant gestures. Argelos would try to get back to Slaughter Key, she was sure. He had already said he felt bound by his letter of marque. Her mood darkened. The conversation had become general again, and she let it pass her by. She would love to have had this, from the house itself to the easy camaraderie of the Mackenzie officers. This was the life she had hoped for when she argued her family into letting her enter the academy. And her father, what would he want? His daughter running around the universe in a ship that might come apart, trying to fight a war on her own, or in a large, experienced organization of competent mercenaries? She glanced across the room and saw the clock. Time to go, but she didn't want to leave. Not really. She felt safe here. With an effort, she turned to smile at John Mackenzie.
Thank you, sir, for a lovely evening, but we must go if we're going to catch that last evening shuttle.
You could stay downside tonight. Guest rooms here, or accommodations in town, if you prefer.
No, thank you. I appreciate the offer, and this has been delightful, but my ship's expecting me.
Duty and all that, eh? Well, I'm glad you were able to take an evening off. It's been my pleasure, and I hope to see you again soon.
When Kai got back to the shuttle port, she had a message from Vanguard.
Stella wants to hear from you as soon as possible. She's really excited about something.
Excited? Not alarmed? System Ansible or the other?
System Ansible. She didn't sound alarmed to me. Just a bit miffed that you hadn't called in and weren't on the ship. Gallivanting around the galaxy is how she put it.
Give her a call back and tell her I'm on my way up from the planet. The shuttle's leaving in about 15 minutes. I should be back in a couple of hours.
Yes, Captain.
Kai hoped it was good news about money. She had to admit that Becker was right about the cost of supplying so many ships. So far, Teddy Ransom's purse had seemed bottomless, but she knew all purses did have bottoms eventually. In that musing about money, she realized she had made her decision. Much as she respected Mackenzie, much as she respected and admired the officers she'd met and recognized that they respected her, much as she had enjoyed the evening and wanted that sort of life for herself, she could not join them. She still cared too much about Slaughter Key, and she still wanted to make her own decisions. If that meant worrying about money and supplies and repairs, so be it. When Kai came onto the bridge, it was nearly local midnight. She felt some change in mood.
What do you know that I don't?
Hugh was not quite grinning, but he looked very happy.
I don't know anything, but I suspect from your cousin's expression that there's good news. You may not need to take Mackenzie's offer.
What do you know about that? I haven't said anything to anyone on the ship.
Slip of the tongue by someone in a bar. I think deliberate slip, but I'm not sure. Anyway, it makes sense they'd want us to join them. We're the spice, they're the cake.
I think we're rather more than that. But let's see what Stella really has to say.
Under the circumstances, it probably had to do with more progress making or selling on board Ansibles. Not a topic she wanted to discuss over ISC's network. She sat down at the onboard Ansibles console. Stella must have been waiting by her own, because she answered at once.
Kai, have you sold those other onboard Ansibles yet?
No. I've talked to Mackenzie about them, and they want them, but it's not a done deal. I don't have enough to supply all their ships anyway. Why? Isn't their money good?
Don't. And whatever else you do, don't sign up with them.
Stella, what's going on?
Stella's tense look widened to a grin.
It's Aunt Grace. You will not believe... Well, you will, because it's true, but...
If you don't tell me, I'm going to reach right through this Ansible and strangle you. Just say it.
Stella's grin was even wider now.
Slaughter Key's government has agreed to contact all the outlying privateers and order them to put themselves under your command as an arm of Slaughter Key Space Force.
What?
They've already started arriving here at Cascadia. You need to get back here with those Ansibles so they can be mounted in the privateers. We don't have the advanced versions ready yet, but that should at least give you parity with the pirates, yes?
Kai's mind seemed to expand like a balloon, with something she realized was joy.
Yes. Yes, it will. How many privateers?
They've made contact with 37 so far. All have contacted me to say they're on the way. The first four have arrived in system here. How many of those Ansibles are left?
32?
See how fast Toby can hand-build another 5 or 6 or whatever.
What does the local government think about a lot of privateers showing up? Have you asked them?
Kai could imagine serious problems from that.
Slaughter Key contacted them directly. They've worked some kind of deal. I think there may be a few ships from here joining up too, but not until they're supplied with the Ansibles. In the meantime, though, they've committed some funds for supply via Slaughter Key. How soon can you leave there? What's your travel time to here?
Kai turned to Hugh.
What would be our ETA for Cascadia Station? Fastest, safe route?
For all our ships?
Kai nodded.
I'll get to work on it. And if you're contemplating an early departure, I'd say more like 60 hours. We still have munitions coming up for all ships.
Stella, it's going to be days before we can leave here. We're loading munitions coming up from the surface. I'll have the figures for you as soon as I can.
Good. Call me anytime. I'll be in cell phone contact with Toby if I have to be out of range of this Ansible. Or use the system.
Kai looked at her bridge crew, who were trying to pretend they had no interest in the messages.
Life's about to get even more interesting. Slaughter Key's sending reinforcements, and they want me to command them.
Here?
No, at Cascadia, where Stella is.
So, you're not thinking about joining Mackenzie?
Not now.
Kai realized she was grinning and tried to smother it, but then she saw the expressions of her bridge crew.
You all knew about the offer?
There were nods all around.
We thought you'd probably do it, but I said no. She's a Slaughter Key girl at heart, and they don't take orders from anybody.
I did for 4 years.
Kai was too happy to remind him that he was supposed to be more formal.
I don't suppose you had a pool on it. Of course you did. I hope you won, Lee. Your faith is touching. Hugh, I'll want you and Martin to start planning how to bring the mostly civilian crews of the other privateers up to military standards. Resupply is being arranged between Slaughter Key and the Moscow Confederation. And now I need to talk to the other captains and then let Mackenzie know the Ansibles aren't for sale.
And neither are you.
Martin and Hugh exchanged glances. Kai could feel their approval. Kai used the shipboard Ansibles to call the other captains.
What is it? Have you decided whether or not to take a commission with them? Nice fellows all, but I think they're too straight-laced for me.
We're leaving here as soon as we can. If we didn't have to make intermediate jumps that put us at risk, if the pirates happened to be there, I'd leave tomorrow. But we will complete loading the munitions Mackenzie is giving us.
So, you know where we're going next?
Yes, but the destination will not be given to you until we're near the jump point, and even then in a unique code on a channel we hope is still secure.
We've found the enemy?
No, but we've found allies.
Really? That's welcome news.
Our allies need to be provided with the onboard Ansibles I'm carrying. The concentration of ships necessary for that to happen would be a very attractive target. That's why secrecy is so important.
How many ships are we getting? 10? Even 15?
At least 37. Assuming they all get to us safely.
37?
That has to be a government. No one else could mount that many ships unless it's a big merc company like this one. And I can't see them giving us that many.
It is government, but I'm not prepared to say which ones.
Ones? Plural? So we really are going to be a multi-system force.
Looks that way. My source is reliable for some of them, and there's speculation about others. I should have ordered more seals. So, last chance to bail out. I'll understand if you'd rather stay with Mackenzie or go off on your own.
I wouldn't miss this for anything. Of course I'm coming with you.
Baskerville nodded enthusiastically, his hair flopping down on his forehead.
And I. Mackenzie seems to be a decent enough organization. But I want to stay with you.
Slaughter Key sticks together, and my former advisor says you promoted him, so he's yours.
Kai felt a wave of emotion, joy and excitement and affection all mixed, washing away the depression and exhaustion of the past few days. She wanted to think of something stirring to say, but nothing came to her.
I could almost feel sorry for them. The pirates, I mean. They won't know what hit them.
Tomorrow. We'll start on that tomorrow.
Bada's War Command Decision is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2007, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Christopher Sheeran, Michael Glenn, Lily Beacon, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Yasmin Toison, Christopher Grayville, James Lewis, Drew Kopis, Stephen Carpenter, Barbara Pinellini, Sherry Simpson, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Jeff Baker, Michael John Casey, Andy Clemens, Eric Messner, Jeff Allen, Joe Brack, Danny Gavigan, Tim Gettman, Kimberly Gilbert, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Scott McCormick, Tony Nam, Gary Tells, Richard Rowan, and Ken Jackson. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. If you enjoyed Vada's War, be sure to look for the Serrano Legacy, available at Rookstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Sakage, a lord of shadows. I claim the shadows that the shadow may not. I am the strong arm of deliverance. I am Shadow Strider. All the pieces will be put into play. I am the scales of justice. I am he who guards unseen. I am Shadow Slayer. I am nameless. A new darkness will rise. My way is hard, but I serve unbroken. I will do justice and love mercy. The final battle will threaten all the world. Until the king returns, I shall not lay my burden down. And only Kyler can stand in the way of the Krull.
Yes, there's no way to win except to raise these monsters. It will be an orgy of death.
Then let us raise the monster.
The end is nigh. Find out where all the pieces fall in Beyond the Shadows, Parts 1 and 2. Available in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.